You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Hi there, welcome to the show once again, and thanks very much for listening. It's Friday, June the 18th, and updating you at 1:26, and after an extraordinarily fraught morning here at Ascot, news has just come through to the surprise of many that racing goes ahead. 19 mils of rain overnight, and at least that subsequently to the start of racing, means that the ground will be very testing indeed. All the balls up in the air, but the good news is after delegations, deputations, get-togethers of jockeys, representatives of trainers, and the clerk of the course and the stewarding team, with some rail movement and some clever placement, the meeting will go ahead Friday. The forecast is set to dry up overnight, so there doesn't look to be any danger on Saturday either. There'd been all sorts of fancy contingency plans that you might have heard about earlier. They are not necessary. Speaking to you now, 1:25 Friday, meeting goes ahead. So we're able to look ahead later in this episode in the comfort of knowing that, in the company of David Menuisier, who's got Bellocchio running this afternoon, and a really important runner tomorrow as well, and David Redvers, who's responsible for three runners over the course of this afternoon. He won't mind the rain either, but we'll start by having a look back at yesterday and mixed fortunes for two really talented horses. Stradivarius's reign came to an end. He couldn't win his fourth Gold Cup, but hail a new star in Subjectivist. Rishi Persad joins me today from ITV Racing. Rishi, had Stradivarius a clear run, would he have won the Gold Cup?
I am not convinced he would have won even with a clear run. I think Subjectivist won well, and he was a significantly better horse than his rivals on the day. I think Subjectivist, perhaps regardless of how Stradivarius would have run, or a peak Stradivarius would have given him a great race anyway, but I don't think Stradivarius was quite at his best yesterday. There was a moment where he came alive in the race, perhaps about half a mile from home, just before he ran into all that trouble. But what he did once Frankie got out, and I know that it came at a time where the horses were quickening and he got trapped in behind a bend. The momentum he lost was significant, and I believe that is perhaps, he might have finished second at best, but I thought the winner was far superior to all his rivals. Not the greatest moment for Franco Dettori, without question. He himself will know that he could have done better on the day, but I don't think Stradivarius would have beaten Subjectivist, all things being equal.
Do you think Frankie Dettori would swap anything else this week to have that moment again?
Not with the Stradivarius that raced yesterday, I don't think. I think if a peak form Stradivarius who'd won the Gold Cup the year before had turned up, then perhaps. But I think the Stradivarius that raced yesterday, I don't think he would have beaten Subjectivist. So in my opinion, I don't think Frankie would have bothered to swap anything in that regard. But I think at the end of it all, Stradivarius has been a real top-class stayer, one that we will obviously remember for a very long time. Doesn't mean he won't win again. It's quite possible that he could come back out and win something like the Goodwood Cup, depending on where Subjectivist goes. And I'm sure there'll be other chances for him this season, but I don't think if he and Subjectivist met again that he will beat him.
Yeah, we'd love the rematch in the Goodwood Cup, wouldn't we? And is there anything to suggest Subjectivist can't now be the preeminent stayer for two or three years to come?
I think if Mark Johnson says that this is as good a stayer that he's had taking on Stradivarius in recent times, given Mark Johnson's excellence with stayers, including the likes of obviously Double Trigger and Royal Rebel, etc., I think it's enough to say that this is an outstanding stayer of any time, Subjectivist. And a lot of people use the cliche, he is the new kid on the block. He threatened to be that when he did what he did in Dubai, and he's confirmed it, so that's enough for me. And don't rule out what he did in France at the end of last year. So he's now put together three Group 1 wins in varying types of ground. He's an outstanding stayer.
I enjoyed all the interviews afterwards, particularly Dr. Jim Walker, who was on this podcast yesterday, and you can go back and listen to yesterday's show and hear just how nervous he was and just how much it meant to him. Mark Johnston, likewise, this was the race he really wanted this week with his brilliant Royal Ascot record. But perhaps most of all, the story seemed to be about Joe Fanning, and that was a narrative really that was taken out of our hands and placed there by his weighing room colleagues.
It was a lovely moment. I was in the winner's enclosure waiting for the horse to return, and then one by one they started coming out, and I turned and I noticed that they'd all come out of the weighing room to greet Joe Fanning, and it just shows just the high regard in which someone like Joe Fanning is held by his colleagues. Mark Johnson was keen to point out after the race that Joe Fanning has won Group 1 races before, and he is as good a front-running rider that he thinks there's ever been. He compared him with Steve Cawthon yesterday. He said that previously he thought Jason Weaver was as good a front-running rider, a rider that he'd ever seen. But he now thinks that Joe Fanning of the current jockeys is as good as there is.
And Mark Johnston, the man who has trained more winners than any other trainer in UK racing history. And it wouldn't quite be Royal Ascot without him. So as the rain continues to team here at Royal Ascot, I want to talk to David Menuisier, who's down at his base in Pulborough, about to make the journey up here. He's got Bellocchio today, Friday in the Edward the Seventh, and Wonderful Tonight, his great heroine of last year, coming out again in the Hardwick tomorrow. When I told you what the weather was like, you said good, David. You're in a minority, but an important one.
Look, I'm delighted. As I've said to a few of your colleagues a few weeks ago, you know, I'm dreaming of a rotten summer, you know, so it's the start of the dream coming true now. Yeah. Now look, Bellocchio should love his ground, you know. I mean, let's don't forget that he beat Moafef last year at Salisbury, you know, first time out, when he was still burly and what have you. So I'm pretty sure that, you know, the softer conditions will suit him well. And also the step up in trip, you know, there's bags of stamina on the damp side. He hasn't showed his true colours so far, you know, in two outings at Sandown, because the ground wasn't too bad, but I mean, the horse lost a shoe in the bend, so he had to do the whole straight with only one shoe, and he came back of the race really sore. He had to have 8 or 9 days off following the race. So he didn't really benefit from that fitness edge to go to the Dante. So despite all, I thought he ran a decent race on ground that wasn't perfect. So I'm looking forward to seeing him over mile 4 ounce of ground.
Yeah, sounds exciting. And you're somebody who likes to bring these horses along, you know, steadily enough. You don't like to squeeze the lemon too early in the season.
No. I mean, look, he will just keep on improving as we go. He could be potentially a ledger horse in the future, and that's why I would like him to show what he can do really under this sort of conditions, to have a better idea of what to do with him later on in the year. And he's also entered in the Arc de Triomphe, just in case, you know.
Well, whether or not he gets to the Arc de Triomphe, I would imagine that Wonderful Tonight will be heading there if all goes to plan, given what she did at Longchamp last year, given what she did here at Ascot. How's she come through her extended winter?
Yeah, she's fine. I felt that she was a bit short of work to make her engagement at Epsom earlier in the month, but she's come to hand nicely now, and she's fit enough to have a run. Look, I think she'll run at 80-85% of her fitness, so which is enough to have a first outing. But then I can't promise that she won't blow up in the last furlong, you know, because as you mentioned, the main target is in October, and it really depends on how much petrol she burns in the first mile of the race, because let's don't forget that Philly can run a bit free early in her races, you know, so I just hope that she doesn't burn out too much gas and she can finish off the race nicely. But yeah, she might blow up, but it's all part of the plan, you know. She will improve massively from that run. Whatever she does, she'll make us proud, and hopefully she'll be competitive to pick up a good check.
Well, all the best to David Menuisier with his runners today and tomorrow if racing goes ahead, with inspections being called as I speak. The other star performer, Rishi, yesterday was the horse that David mentioned there, the horse that Bellocchio beat, Mahafath. And I think it's fair to say he probably won with a little bit more in hand than the winning margin suggested, having veered all across the track late on.
Yeah, I think a fair amount of things, either by circumstance or choice, didn't go ideally for Mahathir through the race. He was widest of all turning in. He was held up at the back and had to make up a lot of ground round the bend, which I don't think is ever a smart thing to do. But it was just how things perhaps panned out. But I think he won with a little bit in hand. And he's still clearly a little bit green. He hung away to the rail in the closing stage. I do think the second horse is all right. I think he's going to turn out to be okay. But I think Mahathir is going to be the superstar that William Haggas has always believed he is. I think the only thing is, some people are saying after the race, well, you know, should he have run in the Derby? I think they're vindicated, the fact that he missed the Derby. He won here. I know it's not the Derby, but the fact after the race that William Haggas said, if he's going to ever move and trip from a mile and a quarter, it'll be down and not up. Therefore, I don't think the Derby is that big a miss.
This was the passage of play after the race. So I saw on my phone that he'd given an interview to you and then I think perhaps to Laura King from Dubai, sort of suggesting that the eclipse might be a possibility. By the time he got to me, the eclipse, I think, had even by then had sort of slid further back in his mind, and he was thinking about something not quite as demanding. Do you think he'd be able to take a hand in a race like that?
Absolutely. I certainly think he's got the raw ability to take a hand in something like the Eclipse. Clearly, it'll require another step up, but you believe the way he's doing everything, that he has more in his tank. And the likelihood is that a better run, a strongly run race in really good company would suit him down to the ground. And I think if he was to go for the Eclipse, he would certainly be on the shortlist.
Well, if racing does take place here at Ascot today, it will take place on very, very heavy ground. The rain continuing to stare odd here. Inspections called, as I said a few moments ago. But three who will run, if it gets the go-ahead, are all under the management or auspices of David Redvers, who joins me now. Sheikh Farhad's Qatar Racing. Sunstrike, the first of the three, David, in the Albany Stakes. What encouragement can you give me that she can handle the ground today?
Only in so much as Dark Angels tend to, and she's a filly that was doing all her best work late when she won last time. So there's a bit of hope, but absolutely no evidence to back it up, I'm afraid.
And do John and Thady give you encouragement that she's better than average?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he basically has up till now, that doesn't tend to have many two-year-old runners in May unless he thinks they're a bit special. And it was always a case of, you know, we'd run her again to see if she's good enough to, after her debut when she was a bit green, we'd run her again to see if she was good enough to go to Ascot, because she was standing out a bit at home, and that's why she's now here. So we've got hope, but I'm not brimming with confidence by any stretch of the imagination.
Okay, well, good luck. Flotus is probably the one to beat on what she did at Goodwood, I guess.
Definitely lovely filly.
You run a filly called Create Belief in the Sandringham that I think is going to start favourite. She's been heavily tipped. She's got form on heavy ground. I don't suppose you mind how much rain comes for her.
No, it can keep raining until, well, as far as I'm concerned, it can keep raining until the end of the day. I'd be absolutely delighted. Not for everyone who's going to have their hats ruined, but certainly for our runners, I'd be more than happy for it to keep raining.
And would you share the general feeling of optimism around her chance?
Yes, very much so. Very much so. She's by make-believe. She's got an action. She's already proven that she can handle it. I'm sure Johnny is very keen on her chances.
And we spoke to David Howden, who's one of the commercial partners also here at Ascot, yesterday, and he's very excited about his involvement with you in Mo Salita, who's been one of the revelations of the season. I mean, I was going to say, what made you latch onto her? But that's about a stupid question, I suppose.
Well, we ran a horse in the race with Michael Bell that she won at Haydock last time that we thought might be the perfect candidate for this race. And she put them all to bed in the style of a stakes filly. They've done an amazing job with the filly. I just thought that she was perfect for our organisation because she's a ready-made broodmare as well. So David, as you can see through his fantastic enthusiasm, has come into the game, and I'm desperately keen to get him a result if she can. She can go close at Ascot tonight. That would be a job done.
David, thanks so much for joining me today. Enjoy the rest of the day. Hope it goes well for you.
Thanks very much. Cheers, Nick.
Well, really looking ahead to today and tomorrow's racing is quite hard because you simply don't know what sort of effect these conditions are going to have. I'm guessing in the Commonwealth Cup now, it's all playing in Sueza's favour. We spoke to her trainer, Francois Rojo, on this podcast last week, and he seemed to think it wouldn't really matter what ground she had.
Yeah, she looks really uncomplicated. She's obviously one with plenty of cut in the ground. I think it's a straightforward task for her, judging by the way she's got to be ridden and the way that she travels through a race and quickens. So she's an obvious contender. I'd actually tipped Sacred in the Commonwealth Cup on the basis that I thought Supremacy was going to make a lot of the running on the stand side rail and she would track him through. And she was only just a half a length behind Campanelli last year at Royal Ascot. And I thought Sacred was a bit of a play. But with the way the race is now sort of falling apart, non-runners, the ground, I have no confidence.
And the Coronation Stakes, the sort of Johnny-come-latelys, if you like, the Primo Baccios and the Snow Lanterns, you'd have thought they're going to be more inconvenienced by the conditions, if indeed they run, than, say, a Pretty Gorgeous, who's coming for an awful lot of money. Perhaps the German filly November, people seem to like her. Are we giving Mother Earth too little credibility for her classic exploits?
I think Mother Earth should not be underestimated for what she's done so far. I think she's a really top-class filly. I like Pretty Gorgeous. I know she was beaten a long way in the end in the Irish Games, but she travelled really nicely, as she often does, and she looked like she would step up significantly for that. The ground wouldn't be a problem, I certainly think, for her. The one horse that always I'm not entirely certain about is Potapova. Sir Michael Stout, two runs, granddaughter of Russian Rhythm, who won this race back in 2003. I think she's interesting, the fact that they're deciding to go for the race. If she does take her chance, I thought she might carry a few each-way shillings.
And it's been quite a notable week for Cheveley Park Stud already, as owners of Indie Angel and breeders of several important winners through the week as well. Let's talk a little about tomorrow, where the feature race is the Diamond Jubilee Stakes. It's, again, an open race. Dream of Dreams has got a great record here. Glenn Shiel gave Holly Doyle her Group 1 last year. I've got one at a bit of a price here, Rishi. Ventura Rebel.
Wow. What's the basis of that?
Right, the angle is, been to Royal Ascot twice, finished second in a Norfolk, third in a Commonwealth Cup, likes this ground, stays on well at the end of his races, needs a stiff six, Yards had a winner this week already, and ran okay in the Duke of York when on the wrong side of the track behind Starman.
Case closed. Strong case as well. And Starman, ground obviously going against him. You're not a fan of Starman now?
I'm a massive fan of Starman, but his one bad run back end of last season came here, and as you say, the ground's gone for him.
Yeah, I was with if the ground had stayed dry, Starman, I'm a big fan of both he and Nahar, and I thought they represented the new generation. But because the ground is changing as it is, I'm going back to a horse I think deserves to win the race. My old pal, Sir M. Stout. Come on, Dream of Dreams. This is the year.
How much pleasure would it give you if Sir Michael Stout could win with either Potapova or Dream of Dreams?
I can't begin to tell you. I love sports stars. I love sports stars that last for a very long time. And Sir Michael Stout has certainly done that. But the most important thing about him is that he's still doing it at a high level. And I think Dream of Dreams, certainly on Saturday in the Diamond Jubilee, can give him another Group 1 win.
Can you think of any other Caribbean-born horse racing personalities who've surprised people with their longevity?
You're very, very naughty. I think I've... This is terrible. Like, you can't do this to me. But you're right. Yeah, I think a lot of people will be on your side on this.
All right, day four of Royal Ascot. It's our final podcast of the week. And once again, we're joined by Jamie Hart, who's going to give us the World Pool update. And it was quite a significant day numbers-wise yesterday, Jamie.
There were some big overpays. Today we saw the same kind of pattern over the day, with the biggest races coming early and then the slightly lower turnover in the last two races as it got later in Hong Kong. But there was a, particularly in Perotto's race, if you'd managed to get the TriCast there, you'd have been very happy, because the TriCast, the bookies TriCast, paid 9,743, but on the Whirlpool it was over six times that, nearer 60,000 for that one. And obviously, if you bet direct with the tote, you get the extra. So you get 65.5 on the Perotto trifecta. And then the last one in the Buckingham Palace Stakes was another one where the trifecta was three and a bit grand on the tricast. Well, the tricast was three and a bit grand, and the trifecta was more like 11. And it's not just on those ones. It's because in Shorefire's race, the King George V, the second favourite beat the favourite. forecast, the standard forecast in the betting shop would have paid £22.78, and the Whirlpool Exactor paid £35. So, you know, you're getting, you know, it's over 50% more. So there's plenty of value in there, and I think today's going to be one of the most interesting days as suddenly we get this ground change and everybody's going back to the books and restudying to try and find whether that high draw bias is going to be in for the trifectas and the quinellas, because we certainly have seen a lot of that this week.
Jamie, just want to pick up on the point of 2 days ago where we had the stunning beauty issue with the blind coming off. We talked about it quite a bit on yesterday's podcast, and there was an article in the South China Morning Post very critical of the regulatory situation and the amount that punters lost on that horse and the impact it might have on the confidence in the world pool. What would be your thoughts on that from a pool basis and from a regulatory standpoint?
It's difficult because in Hong Kong they are closely regulated by the government. It's a quasi-government institution, so it's a little. They have less flexibility than, say, we would do, or somebody running the pool in this country, or running a betting business in this country. But I was surprised they were blaming it on the UK kind of stewards or the decision there, because ultimately, if you're running the pool, certainly if it was in this country, and this is where I've got to say that I'm not completely familiar with what Hong Kong needs to do from a government point of view. So, but from this country, if you were running your own pool, you could make a call on which ones you declared non-runners, not. So I don't see how that they can say that that's an issue with the UK there. They are running that pool. If they decided by Hong Kong rules that would have been a non-runner, they could have made that a non-runner. I'm not sure. Plenty of bookmakers have made a goodwill gesture and paid back. Certainly people that bet directly with the tote on that, on Stunning Beauty, have had their money back, the ones that bet directly online, because that's the only area we can control. I was a little disappointed that it became a big issue there, and certainly that they were pointing at Ascot stewards.
It is Friday, which means it is Thoroughbred Racing Commentary Global Rankings time with James Willoughby. I've been aching all week to hear, Willow, your views on some of the performances at Royal Ascot and how they might impact on a global stage and within your Thoroughbred Racing Commentary rankings. So, good place to start Tuesday with the current TRC number one, Palace Pier, in the first race of the week. Well, what did we think of that?
Look, it's a case of things that make you go, wasn't convinced totally. Really weak field. It wasn't a world number one type performance, that's for sure. He was well placed in the context of what was a very slowly run race early on. He was ridden well by Frankie De Torre in that he was quick to react. And also, he rode the bias a lot more than several others in the field. He wasn't moving great in the closing stages at all. And it didn't. And when he stumbled after the line, it kind of didn't even surprise me. In short, I thought this was thoroughly unconvincing.
And later that afternoon, we had what appeared to be a significantly improved performance from an already very worthy horse in the Triple Guineas contender, Poetic Flair. Was it too good to be true, do you think, the St. James's Palace Stakes? Or in Poetic Flair, have we got a horse who could take down Palace Pier if they met?
Absolutely. This was one for the ages, Lucky. Without a shadow of a doubt. And the reason I can say that with confidence, beyond the scope of the TRC data, is the time. And the round mile at Ascot, which I actually don't think is a mile, it's 7 furlongs, 213 yards, but time's even shorter than that, I think. But nonetheless, in what was a very strongly run race, Poetic Flair was always cruising, sprinted away below the distance, and stopped the clock at 1:37.40, which is the week's best time performance so far. It stacks up historically with lots of performances, apart from Alpha Centauri, the filly who won the Coronation Stakes under freakish conditions in an even faster time. But this is a top 10 horse now, and it's one of the positive traits, looking of TRC Global Rankings, that we can capture where three-year-olds deserve to be, even though we also rate horses by the volume of their achievements. Look at Essential Quality, for example. He's our world number five. When some people were doubting him going into the Belmont Stakes last time, we had him already on the edge of the top 10. And I think this is going to be the case here as well. This is a very good horse, this Poetic Flay. He's now a world top 10 contender. I think he's better than Adabe, for example, who's world number 7. He's probably as good as Mishrif. And when he beats, when he runs against Palace Pier, that was a Freudian slip, by the way. When he runs against Palace Pier in perhaps the Sussex Stakes, I think he can take down the champion.
So he could end up higher than Palace Pier in the rankings, do you think, at some point?
If he beats him and he's already in the top 10, the chances are the algorithm, this is all mathematic, no human involvement, but it's a very good chance because the algorithm looks to find the ranking of contenders that explains past results the best. And if you've got a horse that's improving, like Poetic Flair, and runs against another horse who's only quite close to it in the rankings, then it's inevitable that it'll be more highly ranked and such. I think we're looking at a horse with the potential to do that.
So I need to ask you about Wednesday's Heroine, Love. Okay, she might have had the race handed to her on a plate, but she still beat the Breeders' Cup Heroine or Daria with a solid high one teens horse Armory back in third. She was ranked 6 when last we saw her in the global rankings. Where's she likely to slide back in, James, do you think?
She's very likely to land about number 4, Nick, which is a place that's occupied by Mishrif at the moment. Now, in terms of the form that she achieved this week, I agree with you. On paper, it looks very good. However, I thought there was a powerful rail favour in bias on the round track for the first couple of days. And I felt she was also strongly favoured by an excellent ride by Ryan Moore. So she has got quite questions to answer, but there's no doubt about her accomplishments now. She's stacking up a very impressive CV, and she fully deserves a world top 5 spot on what she's done. So she'll come back in just above where she was when she left the rankings under our rule that 180 days off the track or more results in a horse dropping out of the classifications.
And yesterday, that must have put a song in your heart, seeing Subjectivist win like that. A horse you've always had a huge amount of time for from a times perspective and from that victory in the Dubai Gold Cup. Where do you think he is likely to figure now in amongst the world's best racehorses, according to your rankings, given the fact that Stradivarius, the horse who was well beaten yesterday, even though he campaigned almost exclusively in staying races, was firmly ensconced in the TRC top 10 for a significant portion of last year?
I'm thinking, I don't know what will happen. It's harder to call. I'm thinking somewhere around 15, 16, 17, maybe just above where Stradivarius was, which was number 19. If you think about this, is he yet the match of a horse like Eduardo, the Australian sprinter? Or, and I love to bring this name up as much as I can, Zaki, a favourite of the of Nick Luck Daily recently. So I think we'll see him probably around 15, 16. Could be lower, could be higher, I'm not sure. But one thing is for sure, wherever the system ends up ranking him, what a tremendous moment that was, that the moment just before the turn-in, when he was cruising, he had the entire field covered, and there back in the run was poor old Stradivarius, who was hemmed in. He's had his moment in the sun, but this Subjectivist, he fully deserves now to be taken very seriously as the next staying star here in Britain.
Thanks to James, thanks to all my guests today, David Menuzier, David Redvers, Jamie Hart, for his work all week. Rishi is back with me. Now, if racing does go ahead this week, I ought to mention that Fitzdares, our supporters, have got an offer today. Back a winner at 2-1 or bigger and get a free bet. That's just today, Friday, for new accounts only. Terms and conditions apply. Rishi, what are we going with?
The hardest day so far. Not that I've done very well so far this week, but I do like significantly in the last race today for Carl Berg. I think the ground's fine. I also heard that the horse had been working with Kaboo. That's all that needs to be said.
Has one unraced horse ever dominated so many broadcasts in one week? Mind you, Kaboo did run incredibly well. I think if he'd had a draw, he'd have won.
I think he would have gone very close to winning. He ran an absolutely blinding race first time. No Dazzle, Sir M. Stout, 1996, but not too bad.
That's Sir Michael Stout, ladies and gentlemen, trainer of Dazzle, the winner of the Windsor Castle Stakes in 1996. And Rishi will be hoping that he has a few winners between now and the end of the week. Rishi, thanks so much. Hope you've enjoyed the week.
I've loved it. And this has been the highlight, Lucky. Thank you.
top man, Rishi Prasad. Thank you very much for listening. And thank you to Asker for all their hospitality this week as well. I hope you've enjoyed these podcasts. We will see you on Monday. Tom will be in the hot seat on Monday morning. Thanks to everyone who's contributed. We will see you then and enjoy a brilliant final couple of days punting here at Asker. That was Friday, June the 18th. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.